All right, so let's say you're hanging out with some friends, right? Just chilling on a fishing barge. When they suddenly decide to break into a storage unit, you had no idea they were going to do this. You don't participate at all, but you're there. Could you actually be found guilty just because you were present?
That's the question at the heart of State v. Hoselton. It's this case out of West Virginia that really dives into this whole idea of mere presence and how it plays into the accomplice liability.
This is a real case, right? This isn't just like some theoretical legal thing.
Yeah, this actually happened.
Okay, so paint the picture for us. Who was Hoselton and what went down on that barge?
So we've got 18-year-old Kevin Hoselton hanging out with some friends on a fishing barge, and at some point his friends decide, hey, let's break into one of these storage units on the barge, but they never tell Hoselton about it.
Okay, so he's totally oblivious. So where is Hoselton while this is all going down?
He's at the opposite end of the barge, just completely unaware of what his friends are up to. And he only ends up going to investigate when he hears some noises. And that's when he kind of stumbles upon them, like in the act.
Right, and he didn't join in or touch any of the stolen stuff. He just goes back to where he was. But here's where it gets interesting. Later, the police question him, and they ask if he was acting as a lookout. And he says, "You could say that. I just didn't want to go down there."
Yeah, that's a tricky statement, right? It sounds like he's admitting to something.
Totally.
But here's the thing. The court didn't see it that way. They actually sided with Hoselton. And their reasoning in this case is super important for understanding what actually makes someone an accomplice to a crime.
Okay, so before we get into how the court decided, can you lay out what the law actually says? Like, in West Virginia, what does it take to be convicted as an accomplice?
So to be convicted as an aider and abettor, or what they call a principal in the second degree, the prosecution has to prove four things.
All right, let's hear them. What's the first one?
The first thing they have to prove is that you were associated with the criminal venture. So basically, they have to show you were connected to the crime in some way.
Makes sense. Okay, what's the second one?
The second one is participation with the intent for it to succeed. You can't just be there. You have to be actively involved and want the crime to succeed.
So you really got to be in on it, both mentally and with your actions.
Right.
Okay, what about the third one?
The third one is that your actions were aimed at making the crime succeed. And this is where aiding and abetting really comes in, right? You have to be doing something that actually contributes to the crime's success, not just watching it happen.
Okay, so like taking actual steps to help make the crime happen. What's the fourth one?
The fourth one, and this is a big one, is shared criminal intent. So the prosecution has to prove that you shared the same criminal goal as the person actually committing the crime. And this is where this idea of mere presence gets really tricky.
Right, because just being there when a crime's happening shouldn't automatically make you guilty. What's the difference between just being there and actually participating as an accomplice?
That's the key question. The court in Hoselton actually made a big distinction between mere presence and being a lookout.
Right.
Like, a lookout isn't just someone who happens to be nearby.
So, in the eyes of the law, what makes someone a lookout?
Being a lookout suggests a prearranged agreement, like you've planned it out in advance to watch out for trouble and to actually help make sure the crime succeeds. So that bar is much higher than just being in the same area.
So how did the court actually apply all of these elements to Hoselton's case? How did they decide to side with him?
Well, they started by focusing on that statement he made to the police, like that you could say that part.
Yeah.
And they basically said that it's too vague to actually prove that he was being a lookout.
So they didn't buy it as a confession. What else did they consider?
They also looked at the fact that there was absolutely no evidence that actually connected Hoselton to the theft itself. He didn't touch any of the stuff that was stolen. He didn't get any money from it. And like we said, he didn't even know it was going to happen in the first place.
So it sounds like they were really trying to stretch things to make a case out of just him being there and that one kind of ambiguous statement. Did the court say anything in their opinion that really gets at this whole mere presence issue?
Yeah, they were very clear that just being present at a crime scene doesn't automatically make you guilty. And there's one quote that I think really captures this. They said, "Merely witnessing a crime without intervention doesn't make you a party to it."
Wow, that's a powerful statement. Like, you can't punish someone just for being in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Exactly.
Was there anything else?
Yeah, they also said his non-interference was one of the conditions of the commission of the crime, or unless his non-interference was designed by him and operated as an encouragement to or protection of the perpetrator. So basically, for someone's inaction to actually be criminal, it has to be intentional and it has to actually help the crime succeed.
Wow, so it sounds like they were really pushing back against this idea of like guilt by association. What are some of the big takeaways for defense attorneys from this case?
I think State v. Hulselton is a great case for defense attorneys. It shows how you can really challenge accomplice liability charges, and it really emphasizes how important it is to make sure the prosecution can prove all four of those elements.
Yeah, if they're missing even one of them, then the case could fall apart. What else?
I think another takeaway is that you should focus on the lack of prearrangement and shared intent. Like, this case really shows that just being there or saying something kind of vague isn't enough to say someone's guilty.
Right, that's super important for protecting against guilt by association. But what about from the prosecutor's side? What can they learn from a case like this?
I think State v. Hulselton is a warning to prosecutors that they can't just rely on vague statements or the fact that someone was at the crime scene. They need to have really solid evidence of what the defendant was thinking and what they actually did to help the crime happen.
So vague statements, just being there, that's not enough.
Nope. They need to really connect the dots between the defendant and the crime succeeding.
It definitely makes you think about all those situations where it's not so clear whether someone's just watching or if they're actually involved. What really stood out to you about this case?
It's just a powerful reminder that our legal system requires more than just being in the wrong place at the wrong time. It has to be a choice to take part in the crime and to do something that helps it happen.
It's not just about being close. It's about your intention and what you actually do. You know, before we wrap up this part of our deep dive, I want to leave our listeners with a thought. How does a case like this change the way you think about guilt by association?
That's a great question. It really challenges us to be careful about how we judge someone's involvement in a crime. We can't just assume guilt because someone was there. We have to look at all the facts, the evidence, and think critically.
It's wild to think State v. Hulselton isn't just some legal theory. It makes you think about, like, what mere presence actually means in real life.
Oh, yeah, it totally goes beyond the courtroom. Makes you think about responsibility and how we see guilt.
Right. How many people end up in legal trouble just because they were in the wrong place?
It happens, and that's why having solid legal principles is so important to prevent unfair outcomes. Hulselton helps us fine-tune what accomplice liability really means.
You mentioned earlier about Hulselton being a principal in the second degree. Could you break that down for our listeners who might not be legal experts? What's the difference from being, like, the main perpetrator?
Sure. So legally, the principal in the first degree is the one who actually does the crime, the one who carries out the illegal act.
So Hulselton's friends who broke into that storage unit.
Exactly. And a principal in the second degree is someone who helps them out, encourages them, basically makes the crime happen, even if they aren't the ones physically doing it.
So basically an accomplice. And they can be just as responsible as the person who actually committed the crime.
That's right. But the court here said Hulselton wasn't even a principal in the second degree.
Because they didn't think there was enough proof he actually took part or even had the same criminal intent as his friends?
Exactly. The court zeroed in on this idea of prearrangement as a key factor.
Which makes sense. Prearrangement means it wasn't just, oh, I happened to be there. It means you planned it out, you agreed to help with the crime.
Precisely. Imagine if Hulselton had said to his friends beforehand, yeah, I'll keep watch while you break in. The whole case could have gone differently.
Probably would have. That agreement beforehand directly connects him to the crime. It wouldn't be so easy to say he was just a bystander.
Crazy how small details like that make such a huge difference in court.
Really shows the nuances of the law. Something else that stood out to me was the court's focus on the difference between not interfering and actively encouraging.
Yeah, that's a crucial distinction. The court said just because you don't stop a crime, that doesn't automatically make you an accomplice. Your inaction has to be more deliberate, more calculated to be criminal.
So even though Hulselton saw his friend stealing, he didn't try to stop them. That wasn't enough.
Right. It wasn't active encouragement. He wasn't keeping watch, signaling them, or helping them in any way.
It's all about context. What might be aiding and abetting in one case might be totally fine in another.
You got it. The law has to be flexible enough to consider the specifics of each case.
And that's why cases like State v. Hulselton are so important. They help us figure out those complexities and refine how we understand the law.
They set a precedent for future cases and guide us in how to apply legal principle fairly.
Stepping back a bit, what do you think this case tells us about the criminal justice system as a whole?
To me, State v. Hulselton reinforces the principle that you shouldn't be punished just for being in the wrong place. It's about individual culpability. You should only be held accountable for what you did, what you intended, not what others did.
It's like a protection against punishing people based on just being connected to someone or on guesses.
Absolutely. It underscores the importance of due process, a fair trial, and being presumed innocent until proven guilty. The burden of proof is on the state. They can't convict someone without strong evidence.
But flipping that around, thinking about how we see guilt and responsibility, do you think we tend to jump to conclusions based on who someone knows? Does a case like this challenge that?
That's a good question. It's easy to think, well, they were there, they must have been involved. But Hulselton reminds us to resist that. Look at the evidence. Consider each person's situation before judging.
It's a call for being nuanced, careful, understanding the complexities of law.
The law isn't just black and white. There are gray areas, and we need to be aware of those when we're trying to figure out if someone's actions make them guilty.
This has really been eye-opening. I feel like I have a much better understanding of accomplice liability and this mere presence concept. It's easy to oversimplify these things, but cases like this show, it's not always so straightforward.
I agree. These legal principles can be tricky, and understanding the subtleties is crucial for making sure justice is served.
You know, before we wrap up our deep dive on State v. Hazleton, I want to go back to something you said about this case being useful for both defense attorneys and prosecutors.
Yeah, definitely. Both sides can learn from it.
So for those defense attorneys out there, what are some of the key takeaways from Hazleton?
The biggest thing is to really scrutinize the prosecution's case. Make sure they can prove all four elements of aiding and abetting. If even one is weak, that's an opening for the defense.
So Hazleton gives them a way to challenge the state's evidence, especially about intent and actions.
Right. If the evidence is weak or unclear, point that out. Argue that just being there or saying something vague isn't enough to prove guilt.
Push back against that whole guilty by association idea.
Exactly. Hazleton makes it clear just being at a crime scene doesn't make you a criminal. The defense needs to highlight the difference between passively being there and actively taking part.
What about for prosecutors? What can they learn from Hazleton to make sure their cases are strong?
Hazleton shows how important a thorough investigation is. Prosecutors need solid evidence of the defendant's intent, that they were actively involved. They can't just rely on circumstantial stuff or vague statements.
So connecting the dots, showing how the defendant's actions directly led to the crime happening.
Exactly. And especially in lookout situations, Hazleton stresses proving there was an agreement beforehand. That prearrangement is key.
Sounds like both sides need to be on their toes, ready to make strong legal arguments.
Definitely. State v. Hazleton shows how our legal system works, with both prosecution and defense playing crucial roles to make sure justice is done.
And speaking of justice, it's interesting how Hazleton acted as a check on the state's power.
Good point. It reinforces the idea that the burden of proof is on the state. You can't convict someone based on guesses or weak evidence.
Reminds us about checks and balances, protecting the rights of the accused.
Absolutely. The courts are there to safeguard those rights, making sure justice is fair and impartial.
Well, we've covered a lot of ground today. Hopefully our listeners have a better grasp now of accomplice liability and the impact of State v. Hazleton.
It's been a great discussion.
For those who want to dive even deeper, check out the full court opinion. It's a really well-written decision that tackles these complex legal principles.
Definitely worth a read for anyone who wants to understand the finer points of accomplice liability and protecting individual rights.
As always, we encourage our listeners to stay curious, keep learning, and never stop questioning the law. It's always evolving, and we need to engage with it thoughtfully.
And if you ever find yourself in a legal situation where you're not sure about your rights, get advice from a qualified legal professional.
Great advice. And with that, we'll wrap up this episode of The Deep Dive. Thanks for joining us on this exploration of State v. Hazleton and mere presence.
It's been a pleasure. Until next time, stay informed, stay engaged, and keep those legal minds sharp.